explain something about it.
It's weird.
Okay. Give me one tiny example of weirdness.
There is these really big, weird creatures that are weird.
Okay, creatures. Explain why are they weird. Don't they look like a human?
Yeah, but no.
Okay. Okay. And they have what on them?
Eyes.
Eyes?
I have something else, though.
Wheels.
Wheels?
Four faces.
Wings. Four different faces?
Oh, and they oxen, a person, a lion, and an eagle.
Okay. Powers. Multiple different directional wheels, which never turn, but always go the right way.
Because they don't forward. Make mistakes.
They don't make mistakes.
So, like, Ezekiel, like... So he ate bread. And
yes.
And he had to lay on his right and left side for many days. And he cooked it with animal poop.
He did.
No, human poop.
No, it was going to be human poop.
No,
he said,
cow poop.
Can you please not make me do
this? Oh, yeah. And then Jacob told us like how he had to like cut this thing up. And he was like, Jacob, you
So what did he cut?
Alright, Zeke,
grass.
Boy.
No, hair.
Whose hair?
His own hair.
Hair.
Remember that?
Okay, so before we do the bread and the hair, let's go back to the angels for a moment. Where is Ezekiel?
He's at a prison camp near the
Okay, a refugee Kibar. Camp near River Kibar. Okay. And where is the River Kibar?
In Babylon.
In Babylon, or near Babylon, anyways. Okay. Why is he in a refugee camp?
Because Nebuchadnezzar was taking all of the smart people to try to create a big, ultimate race of beings.
Okay. And how many times was the city of Jerusalem attacked? Twice so far. Once more to come.
Yes.
All right? So he has a vision of these angels, these creatures with eyes and wings and faces and wheels, and they're on fire, and they have a great big dome over the top of them, and then what's on top of the dome?
Jesus.
A throne with Jesus on it, okay? And that is the important part, because what does it all represent? The big conglomeration of creatures up to the throne. What does it represent?
What is the right answer?
Well, who is it on top? She said it. So, it means that God is here, right? If he shows up, that his presence is here, and it's not exactly the way that he showed up on earth normally, is it? With rolling, wheely angels, right? So why is it so huge and grand? What is it showing?
Power.
Okay, power and... a word you probably don't use very often, but it's an important one when we talk about God.
Glory.
And what does glory mean?
Like greatness.
Okay, greatness is good.
Grace and everything.
Grace and holiness. And his glory means that he's, here you are, as a little worm in the dirt, right? And here God is in the heavens. And he's that much greater than us, right? So his glory puts him way up higher. The glory is important because it's his presence, okay? It is his presence that has put him there. All right. So we have a vision. Ezekiel has a vision. And that vision is of those angels and God's presence.
Yes.
And then he has a man come down to Ezekiel and give him something. Or a hand, actually.
Scroll.
A scroll. What's he do with the scroll?
He eats
the scroll, okay?
Damn.
And what is it full of, the scroll?
Honey.
Not sadness and bitterness. terrible things, really. But when he eats it and he tastes it, it tastes like honey. Okay? Why is it full of sadness and bitterness?
Because that's what, like, prophets, that's what their lives.
That's what's going to happen.
His life is a tough life because, well, who's he a prophet for?
God.
Yeah, how about the other side of it?
The people.
The people. What people?
All the people.
All what people? The Jewish sinners, and they're angry and mad. They're going to be thorns in his side, and they're going to be nasty to him, and they're going to really mistreat him. Okay? Pretty much, that's what's going to happen to him. All right? So he's got a tough life, a bitter life. He eats it, but he's going to taste a little bit of sweetness in it, but he's going to have a lot of bitterness to begin with. All right? So we're going to see some of that tonight, some of the bitterness, and then you saw some last week, and you talked to me about it. You talked about the hair. The hair, he cuts off his head, blows it away, he has to chase after it. But what else? There's a little bit of hair. What's he do with it?
He separates it into, like, three pieces, and, like, one he, like, threw it in the wind and, like, chased after.
One he burned.
One he burned, I think.
And then he didn't he, like, have to use
it? No.
No, he weaved it into his belt.
He weaved it into his belt. Okay? All right?
His hair.
And then talk to me about the tile.
Oh! He has this little thing.
He had to set up the battle.
He replicated Jerusalem.
Okay, replicated Jerusalem.
And there was
a burial wall.
A stand out.
Because, like, so there was, like,
a blockade.
Oh.
That's
right.
Why am I saying that?
So, when I was a kid, the best toys ever in the world were G.I. Joes. Way better than anything else. Because the rest was dumb compared to G.I. Joes. So I had 100 of these little guys. Literally. How's that? Literally 100 because I owned 100 of them. And vehicles and all that. And I used to go around the trees and dig tunnels and put guys in forts and build traps and do all this stuff for hours in our side yard. We had this big maple tree, and you could dig under the roots and do all this crazy stuff. So I set up forts and crazy things, like it was mountains and all kinds of stuff. Played army like that. Always setting up battles. And that's exactly what he did, right? He set up the battle. But this battle doesn't have a whole lot of fighting in it. What's the battle really going to end up as? There's a word. A siege, okay? And the siege means what?
They're standing out there, and they won't let anything in and anything out.
We're going to starve you out. Starve you till you die or you give up. And that's what they're going to do. So most people died inside. Now, it wasn't unusual to have sieges, right? Because you have walled cities. You just surround your army around it just far enough out where you kill anybody that walks out. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to do that. And so you had to be careful to make sure that in your cities you had the ability to survive for a long time. Some sieges lasted for 2 or 3 years, okay? They would just go in there and be there for a long, long, long time, okay? So all of that is to show that Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, is going to be basically under attack. Under a siege. And that's the third time, right? Because there's two other times Nebuchadnezzar came in and took smart people out, basically desecrated, and he took and he destroyed most of the city. He knocked down all the city. In fact, it said he knocked down every single block so that there was not one on top of another. Houses were leveled. The temple was leveled. He destroyed. By the time he was finished with that city, there was nothing left by the end, okay? Each time more and more and more destruction. And in fact, I think they started everything on fire because there was gold in the temple. A lot of gold built right into the walls of the temple and everything. And so they started a fire inside the temple and burned a lot of things. And because they burned a lot of things, the gold actually melted and ran into the cracks in the rocks. And so that's why they tore down the rocks, to get the gold out. Okay? Just total destruction of Jerusalem. Took everything. took all of the vessels that they used to use in the temple. The priest had specific vessels, gold vessels and things that they used, and God had them saved up in like a temple treasury over time. Solomon had built this up because he was a really wealthy king. He built that up, and other kings too, and built this huge treasury for the temple. The temple was really one of the wealthiest places. In fact, they believe Solomon's temple was the most expensive building ever built per square foot. Beats any building ever built from that time on or before. If you took their money and put it into today's money, nothing would come close to it. Okay? Just huge, huge amounts of dollars put into it. And when Solomon built that temple, it was incredible. He built the whole entire thing of huge stone blocks, but never used a hammer and chisel on site. He did it all miles and miles away, made it all cut and fit perfectly miles away, brought it up the river, and set it in place, and put it all together. No hammers, no chisels, no saws, not allowed. Too holy of a site. Pretty incredible thing for him to do. And imagine doing that, moving them all by hand, okay? pretty amazing thing. So, this temple, he gets it torn down, and tonight we're going to see more of the temple. This is an incredible thing. We're going to see more of this temple before the final destruction of it. And this temple has grown. In the beginning, we always talk about this part of the temple, okay? This is God's, literally, his tabernacle. That's not really drum scale. More like this, okay? His tabernacle, there's a small 10 by 10 by 10 room, or actually 10 by 10 by 10 cubits, which is 15 by 15 by 15 feet. This is about a 10 by 20 cubit, so 15 by 30 feet. This is the Holy of Holies, where God's presence is. This is the holy place where the priests go. And this was a curtained area in the original tabernacle where everybody could go. Well, when they built the next temple, Solomon's temple, they built buildings for the priests and places for them to stay. They built a court for just the Gentiles and a court for the women and a court for the men, okay? And then they, of course, still in the center had the Holy of Holies and the holy place. So it was a huge, huge temple. We're going to go in some of those rooms in one of Ezekiel's visions tonight, okay? Ezekiel is going to have some very strange things, secret things that he's going to watch that are happening in the temple, okay? God's going to give him a peek into what's really going on, all right? Now, what's important is this. God is angry at the people of Judah, okay? God is angry. That's not a thing you want to be. And I'll tell you, it's not what you want to read about either. Because it gets a little bit frightening to read about God's anger. Because when he actually has anger, the destruction is so complete and so full that he just destroys everything. When he has anger, it's right that he's angry. That's what's scary about it. So he begins to say, look, Ezekiel, I've got something I'm doing. I'm going to take and I am going to destroy Judah, particularly Jerusalem. There won't be anything left. It's going to be gone when I'm done with it. So if we go to Ezekiel chapter number 6, Ezekiel chapter 6, and this is God telling Ezekiel what he's going to do. Ezekiel chapter 6, verse 11 and 12, please. 11 and 12. I'll go this way, 11 and 12. I'll come back to you. You're 11,
okay.
You're 12.
Chapter 6, verse 1.
Yep.
Thus saith the Lord God, smite with thine hand and stamp with thy foot and say, alas for all the evil abominations
Okay, God says, I'm going to destroy them. I'm angry. I'm furious. And how am I going to do it?
Three ways.
So what is it?
The sword.
Sword.
Pestilence.
Pestilence.
And famine.
And famine. Good old pestilence. Who doesn't like that, right? So what's the sword?
What's the sword? Okay. And it, who does that happen to?
People that are
says it right there.
People that are like in the city or near.
People that are right there. Because who's when he's coming in, when Nebuchadnezzar comes in, he brings an army, right? You're hanging around, kill you. That's all. It's easy. It's not a problem. And then the people who are not near, the people who are off in the mountains or off on a journey or off, what happens to them?
Pestilence.
Yes. They get sick and they die. How does God know where they are? Well, don't worry. He's got good track of them. So even if people get away, they're not getting away. And then finally, he's got one more.
If they survive everything else, they're going to starve.
If they survive, well, fantastic. Sounds like it's a pretty complete plan, right? And God has this exact complete plan. He's going to starve them out, just like Ezekiel showed them with the sign of the clay tile and the little army and all the things that he set up last time. We're going to starve you to death. Wow, that's fantastic. There you go. There you go. So God's not even giving him a choice. He's saying, I'm going to wipe you out one way or another. I'm going to get you because I am angry with you. That's not an easy type of a passage to read. Lots of people don't talk about this type of passage. It's not popular, okay? But we need to understand why. And Ezekiel, as he's hearing this message, Ezekiel sees this, and what do you think he feels like? I mean, put yourself in his shoes. It's your people. It's you. You're an Israelite.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So what do you think about that? Try to run away and hope for the pestilence? Is that what you're
doing?
No, it didn't work out for Jonah either, no. So what, I mean, honestly, what do you think Ezekiel feels like?
Disturbed.
Just like what God told him, right? You're going to be sad. You're going to be full of sadness. Because I'm going to show you things that you don't want to see. There are things in this life that are hidden, that are done in secret. And a lot of them. Done in secret in this life. And there are people that do bad things to other people in secret. Okay? There are nasty things done. And we find somebody like a murderer, somebody like a serial killer. And you hear about these things, and boy, what a terrible thing to see every detail. Can you imagine watching on a video what someone did to kill 30 women? It's a terrible thing. And yet, there are things out there that happen. And God sees it all. He sees every little bit of it. He sees everything you and I do in secret. He sees everything you and I do out in open. Okay? And the scarier thing is he knows the thoughts that are in our head before we do it, while we do it, and after we do it. That's the scary part. God is unnerving in that way. And that's why nobody wants to talk about this, right? Ezekiel's a tough book. And I'll tell you, I have not taught this book. I've taught little pieces of it here and there over time. But I've not taught it because it's hard. Because when it comes down to it, it's grappling with some of the hardest things that humans deal with. And here is Ezekiel, and he's sorrowful, and he's sad. And these people are just going to bring sadness after sadness after sadness on him. And there's no good way out for for him. He can't see anything. And he's going to be loaded and burdened down. Can you imagine knowing all the details of something? And even if you were told, even if you could tell people, they just wouldn't believe you. Right? That's what Ezekiel's burden is, right? He starts with the haircut, and he starts with the army tiles, and he's going to have a whole bunch of other things, but he's got a heavy burden on his heart. He's got a heavy burden. And burdens are terrible. Burdens in your heart are the worst. I'd rather work 100 years at hard labor than have a day with a heart that's burdened. And yet, oftentimes that's where we're called to go. Sometimes burdened for other people, and that's okay. But sometimes burden of the own things that we have in our own hearts. Things that bring us sadness. Things that bring us sorrow. Things that bring guilt on us. Those are hard things to have. And Ezekiel, as he watches and he sees, he's not only does he feel sadness and sorrow, no doubt he feels guilt here and there. He's a part of these people. Okay? And God is condemning a whole people. That's a sad day. Not only that, God is condemning Judah, which is his chosen people and his chosen tribe. Because that's where Jesus is going to be born, right? But he's condemning this whole tribe to begin. That's a pretty sad day, okay? So let's go on and see what's really going on. We know that they're going to be destroyed, and here's what's going to happen is this is kind of wrapped around the temple, all right? This is wrapped around what's going on in the temple. Let's go to chapter 7, verse number 21 through 27, okay? We're going to read that section, and we're going to see that God allows the foreigners to come in and not only desecrate the whole country and town, but the temple is specific where he's interested. Okay? So verse 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. Thank you.
And I will give it into the hands of the strangers for a prey, and to the wicked of the earth for a spoil, and they shall believe it.
I will turn my face away from them, and they will desecrate my treasure place. Robbers will enter it.
Make a chain, for the land is filled with crimes of blood, and the city is full of bodies.
Wherefore I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall process their house. I will also make the pomp of the strong to cease, and their holy place shall be defiled.
Destruction cometh, and they shall seek peace, and there shall be none.
Mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor shall be upon rumor. Then shall they seek a vision of the prophet. The law shall perish from the priests, and counsel from the ancients.
The king shall mourn, and the prince shall be clothed with desolation, and the hands of the people of the land shall be troubled. I will do unto them after their disgrace, and according to their deeds, I will judge them, and they shall know that I am the Lord.
Okay, so here is God's thing. He's saying, you know what? You guys have done wrong, and you guys are evil, and you guys are bloody in this town, and you guys are guilty of things. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring a bloody, guilty, vile people to come and take everything from you. God is taking that and bringing in the Babylonians, who will come and destroy at the desire of their whim of their king, excuse me, at the whim of their king, Nebuchadnezzar, he's going to come in and he's going to destroy anything he wants. He doesn't care about the families, he doesn't care about the people, he doesn't care. He wants to get what he wants. In a way, he was much like what Hitler was when he came on the scene in Germany. Okay? Hitler wanted what he wanted. He wanted to create a super race. He wanted to be the leader of that super race. Okay? And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar came in as. And how did that end? Destruction, terrible things on the Jews, right? And the Christians in the Holocaust. Okay? There were great, great sorrows that were brought in from him. The same thing in the spirit of Antichrist. Okay? So here we have, he says, I'm going to bring them in. And then he says, you know what's going to happen? In verse number 26, it says, people are then going to look for, well, 25, it says, people are going to look for peace, and they're not going to find it. And he says, and after peace, which is what our country and our society now says, I want peace, peace on earth. We're going to do it, okay? But in the end, they really don't want to seek God. Typically, until people get in deep trouble, they don't seek God. Well, then it says, well, they're going to try to seek God. And they're going to reach out, and they're going to look at the prophet, and they're going to try to get an answer from the prophet. And what is God going to do? Verse 27, I'm sorry, 26. They're not getting anything. He will not answer them. Okay? That's a sad day where God has turned his back on his people. Remember, these are the people he has loved and he has chosen from the time of Abraham and said, you will be my chosen seed, my chosen race. I'll bring a family from you. And he grows a tribe and he grows a nation and the nation grows and turns their back on God again and again and again and again and again. And eventually, it brings such sorrow to the country that he says, the only way I can do this, the only way I can wipe this out from my country that I've chosen is destruction of them as they know it. And so he does. He literally tears them down piece by piece. Okay, so let's go and see in the vision. He has a vision, all right? Chapter 8, verse number 1. I'll read that. And it came to pass in the sixth year, the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month, as I sat in mine house, and the elders of Judah sat before me, that the hand of the Lord fell there upon me. Okay, so he's sitting in his house, in the refugee camp, sitting there, and there are elders of Judah. So in other words, the leaders of the camp are there with him. And all of a sudden, God comes on him. And he has a vision right in front of him. Okay? So now they're seeing that he's got a vision. Now they can't see what he's seeing. And I don't know if he went into a trance. And I don't know if he went blank. And I don't know if he passed out. I have no idea. As he's sitting there, he goes into the vision. Verse 2, then I beheld, and lo, a likeness as the appearance of fire, from the appearance of his loins even downward, fire, and from his loins even upward, as the appearance of a brightness, as the color of amber. And he put forth the form of an hand, and took me by the lock of mine head. And the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven, and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the inner gate, to look towards the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provoketh to jealousy. And behold, the glory of the God of Israel was there, according to the vision that I saw in the plain. So here he is, and all of a sudden this fiery creature comes up. This is not the angels, this is something which appears to be just flames on the bottom. And a bright burning ember totally on the top. And he's got a hand. Now, he grabs Ezekiel by the hair, says by his locks, grabs him by his hair, and picks him up, and he flies in between the earth and the heaven with him. Okay? None of what Ezekiel happens to him is pleasant, okay? It seems to be really kind of terrible. He takes him up and he sets him down into this place, a dimension we'll call it, as he's traveled there with this guide, he sets him down in this place, and when he sets him down in the place, God's glory is there. And in this dimension, he can see clearly. All around him, he's in Jerusalem. And the temple, he can see very clearly. He's at the gates. Okay? So, whether this really was Jerusalem, really wasn't Jerusalem, was Jerusalem in a different dimension, was just a vision, and it clearly was a vision of some sort, we don't know how God does this, okay? But God wants him to see something. And so he takes him right smack in the middle and says, God's glory is right here. See the problem. We're going to look at the problems. And so he picks him through. He says, I'm going to take you through into some places inside of this temple. I'm going to put you into these places or show you these places inside the temple, and I'm going to show you something is wrong with each one. All right? So we're going to read some passages here, and you're going to tell me what you think is wrong in here. All right. So, verse number 5, wherever we left off last. Read verse 5 and tell me what you think is wrong as he looks in the temple.
Then he said to me, Son of man, look toward the north. So I looked, and in the entrance north of the gate of the altar, I saw this idol of jealousy.
Furthermore, he said to me, Son of man, do you see what they are doing, the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here, to make me go far away from my sanctuary? Now turn again. You will see greater abominations.
Okay. First thing he sees right from the gate, what's he see?
Jealousy.
Jealousy. Okay. Number one problem that he's going to... This is what I have in my temple. If you have ever been at a church where jealousy is an issue, even in small places, what does jealousy do? Makes people angry, tears people apart, destroys relationships. And what does the Spirit of God want for relationships?
Goodness. Not jealousy.
Not jealousy, okay. Unjealousy, right? He wants to bind people together, right? And have harmony. Not jealousy where you're always talking about somebody else, saying, oh, that person is not this or that person is not that. And if I had that what that person had, then I would be so much better. Okay? Jealousy in the heart of a church destroys what God is doing. Okay? Number one problem. Okay, let's keep going. Verse number 7 through 12. And then tell me the problem. Whoa, there's a hole in the wall, okay?
Goodness.
Not a problem yet, but go ahead.
Then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall, and when I had digged in the wall, behold the door.
And he said unto me, Go in, and behold the wicked abominations that they do here.
So I went in and saw, and behold every form of creeping things, and abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel betrayed upon the wall.
In front of them stood 70 elders of the house of Israel, and Jazaniah, son of Shaphan, was standing among them. Each had a censer in his hand, and a fragrant cloud of incense was rising.
Then he said to me, Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the room of his idols? For they say, The Lord does not see us, the Lord has forsaken the land.
Okay. So here it is. He takes him to a little hole in the wall. This is a secret chamber. There were specific chambers for priests and higher up people in the church. Well, in the temple at the time, okay? He takes him to this. He finds a little tiny hole in the wall. There's a little deformity. And he takes it and tears it down. He says, tear into it. He tears it down. Finds a door, opens a door, and what does he see?
Beasts.
Beasts.
70 men with
70 men. What are they doing? What are the beasts and what are the men? Well, they have incense, which incense is usually used during, we don't use it in our church particularly, but incense is used during religious services. Priests use it when they worship. So what are they worshiping?
The beasts.
The beasts, the idols. They're all the pictures of all the things that they worship secretly. All right? So what's the significance of the hole and the door?
You can see, but it's subtle.
Okay, first of all, it's subtle. It's very subtle. It's hidden. Not only where you can't see just the hole, but you gotta get inside, okay, to see it. From the outside, it looks like nothing except for a little hole. You gotta dig inside to find the problem. And so, what is the problem? What's the problem with the 70 guys? Who are the 70 guys? They're leaders, right? They're leaders, and they're worshiping idols. Now, this is a thing that I've always struggled with a little bit. Idol worship. Okay. Have you ever had something, had a little statue or something, you know, like this little guy? Yeah, right. So you have a little statue here. This little guy. Does anybody really want to like bow down to that?
No.
No. It doesn't really. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, Santa's great. I like Santa. But there really isn't anything that makes me want to bow down to it. So what's the attraction of an idol?
Desire.
Desire. Yes.
Desire for.
Well. Everything, all the idols, first of all, were man-made, right? And the idol, they knew that the idol itself was nothing. They made it. It was just a piece of wood or a piece of metal, okay? But what's the problem with an idol? It's not the piece of metal. It represents something in their mind. Typically a place where they take a stand against what God wants you to do and say, I won't do that. I want to do what I want. And when you say that, you say, well, if God doesn't want me to do this, then I'm going to create a God that will. So it's a way to make an opportunity to do what I want. All right? I want to do what I want. And so, if you create an idol, okay, that allows you to get drunk, okay? Because the idol is one of those gods and he's going to drink all the time. You create something where he's got a weakness. And the weakness is just like yours. And guess what? You kind of like a guy that has a weakness just like yours, because then you don't feel so bad about yourself. All right? So you create that idol. And the problem becomes when the leaders are worshiping the idols and not going to God. What that is it's rebellion. Okay? It's rebellion in their heart. So they say, I won't do this. God tells me to do. We all have it. Every one of us. How many of you have ever heard something that your parents have said and inside you thought, that is the last thing I ever want to do? Yeah, if you don't, you're lying, okay? Because I know that. That in your heart, that feeling you have when you say, I don't want to do. That is a rebellious stem, I'll call it. A little seed where it comes from to say, I won't do it. And when we hear what God wants us to do and we turn our backs, That stems from a seed of rebellion in our hearts. Okay? And the only way that we can fix that is through Christ. That's the only way. All right? Only way. Anything we turn to for that is like that. All right? So, that's one of the next things. And then, I'm going to skip through a couple of them. Verse 13 and 14, we won't read it for sake of time. 13 and 14, they walk into a room, and there's a bunch of crying women. They're crying because this is how they worship their god, or their goddess.
Well, that's not funny.
No, it's not. It's not. And it says they're weeping for Tammuz. Okay? Tammuz was a goddess of fertility. Okay? So, if there's a goddess of fertility, what do they want? Where's their heart? Okay, they maybe want babies or just sex. I mean, that's, right? That's what that comes down to, is I want what I want. All right? And that was one particular way that they worshipped it.
Crying,
that particular
whining.
Cried. They had a wailing or a weeping type of thing. Different culture, okay? They also had professional wailers, too, that you paid to go to funerals. So it was a little different culture. All right? So it was showing your grief. All right? Showing your grief. Then they walk into another room, and there's a whole group of guys, and they are bowed down, facing the sun, worshiping the sun. What is that?
Getting blinded.
Okay, getting blinded. Why did people worship the sun? What was worshiping the sun about?
Consistency. It's always there.
It's always there. Well, okay. It's not. It is there, but what does it give them? Light, which gives them life, which grows crops, which gives them
food,
money. Okay? It gives them prosperity. If you're wealthy because the sun shone a lot on your crops and grew good crops, then it must be the sun, right? Not God that made the sun, but it must be the sun. Because the sun gives us the crops. And so they're worshiping prosperity. So they have... they have issues within the temple, okay? Issues within the temple. When God comes out here, he says, here's the issues that are happening just within my church, just within my temple. These are the things that I want to destroy here. I'm going to get rid of them. These are the secret things that are being done in secret within the temple, and I want to destroy it. They're evil, he said. The worship of these things, the rebellion, the secrecy that are happening in the hearts of these people are what is causing the whole country to turn. Because the leaders are really pushing their people in that way. And so, God calls in six men. One of them has a pen, an inkwell, like a writer's kit. And he walks up, and God says, you have a job. I want you to go out. I want to dip your pen in, and I want you to mark everyone that has not turned against me in these ways. God, I want you to mark everyone. And the other five, go destroy everybody else. Okay. Okay. So, what does Ezekiel do? He sits down and weeps and cries and says, isn't there a chance? Isn't there a hope? Isn't there anything? Isn't there anything that we can do to help these people? Can't we turn these people back? Can't we turn them back? And as we see what God is doing here, what man is doing here, as man is here in chapter 10, and we won't read there, but if we were to go to verses 18 to 22, and throughout chapter 10, you would see that while you're in chapter 10, Ezekiel sees the same creatures he saw by the river. The big wheels, the fire, the eyes, the wings, great big dome, and there sits Jesus on top, okay? The great, big, huge, the glory of God. And as he watches, it begins in the temple. And they walk up, roll up, whatever they do, okay? And they stand on the very doorway of the temple. The whole creature, the whole everybody stands on the doorway of the temple. Jesus there on top. And then, as a symbol to say, we're going. And in the saddest moment in Ezekiel, God steps out of the temple. And his presence is no longer in the temple. If God is not in the temple, then there's no point. There's no point in the temple, right? So God's presence leaves the temple. God's presence walks out of the temple, and it was a terrible day for Ezekiel. A terrible day for Ezekiel. As God walks out of the temple, and the creature with him flies away. It's gone. The day that you have turned your back on God again and again and again and again and will not have him again and again and will not listen. And you remember last week, Ezekiel couldn't speak because these people have not heard for hundreds of years. They would not hear God's messages from every prophet that came along. Finally, Ezekiel comes along. They're already taken away from their country, and they still won't listen. They still won't listen. Okay? And so God, in this vision, says, my glory leaves the temple. And then what do you have? You got a building. You got a building that Nebuchadnezzar's coming to flatten. God's not there anymore. He's gone. Presence is gone. If God's presence was still in that temple, Nebuchadnezzar would not be able to flatten it. Okay? But instead, God walked out. And it just became a building. Building like many others. Right? So understand the importance of this. This sad time, there's this vision, God leaves the temple, there's a whole lot of things. Ezekiel's sad. He's crying. All right? But next time we're going to learn about a hope that Ezekiel has. There is a hope. That hope is like a little tiny piece of shred that's left. Called the remnant. God is going to be merciful. As we often find, in the midst of a tough, terrible time, God's mercy still shines through because that's who he is. All right? So, big, bad, terrible things, God's turning around and walking out of the temple, essentially. His presence is no longer there. These people have all turned their hearts away, would not have God. But even still, God is merciful. And this whole process that God is going through is to help those people, turn those people back to him. He has a plan, God's plan. It's going to take a while to get there. Okay? So next week, we'll continue on, talk a little about the remnant.